So maybe I should talk about something that I don't know, or something that I don't have. Let's talk about metta. It's easy to talk about something that you don't have developed. So, the only reason why I'm sitting here in front of you, telling you something, is of course I want you to make suffer and have a lot of pain so that I can rejoice in it, because I have suffered for such a long time. I had so much pain, so much hardship, so much torture within this 11 or 17 years I was practicing. So if I see your faces in pain or in torture, then I actually can rejoice. You can believe it or not. It's up to you. What I wanted, what I really want for you, and I haven't found any other way. If we don't go through the fires of hell, we will not reach the ocean of happiness. There is no way. We have to go through these fires of pain, of dukkha, of torture, of hardship, to reach the safe shore of supreme happiness. The Lord Buddha himself fainted 3 times because out of pain. Of extreme pain he went through. Thanachan Man fainted 3 times because out of extreme pain he went through. Thanachan Mahabua himself, he said he never fainted, but he was very close. I have the experience of being very close to fainting myself. If you don't wage a war against the kilesas that grab our heart, and that is a lot of dukkha, that is a lot of suffering, that is a lot of hardship, we will not be able to uproot the kilesas. We will not be able to uproot avijja, to uproot greed and hate from our hearts. Greed and hate and avijja are very deep rooted within our own heart. So, to get them out, we need to tolerate or endure some of the pain and dukkha. Metta is translated as loving kindness. Now, what do you think? You have your ideas about what is loving kindness. And you have the idea, you know, of somebody or a person, you know, who has loving kindness, or what he shall do to you, or how he should react, how he should be. He should be smiling along while you are in deepest pain, while you are in torture. He should give you this or give you that. But now, think about one thing. Think about that the whole world is hanging on a pipe of opium. They are very happy. Sometimes more happy, sometimes less happy. Because they have their opium. The opium is called avijja. That's what they have. And they go on and go on. They go on in the round of samsara forever. As long as they have their opium, they will be willing to go on. Now there's a wise person or there's a teacher who sees that this is not, has not a good effect on the people. So, what do you think? How would the people will react when that person is taking their opium pipe away. They don't think he has a lot of matter. They think he's cruel, he's hard-headed, and so on. But actually, for the wealth of this person, for the personal riches, this would be good. It's the same thing. This is one example. Another example, that your body is full of thorns that have a poison that makes you weak. Now there's one person who sees that these thorns in your body are producing a poison that makes you fall asleep. So he will take out the thorns. But to take out these thorns, first of all, it will hurt. Second of all, until the wound has healed, it will still hurt. Until the wound is completely healed, it will hurt. Would you think of that person, if you don't know, he has a lot of matter? Normally, not. Because, in the sense of a doctor, of a physical doctor, we all know that he's trying to help us. So we bear a little bit of pain, or we know that there's a little pain involved, so we will allow it to do. Allow him to do it, and then once the pain has gone, we will be good. But on the spiritual path, it's very difficult to say. What is it, what the person or what the spiritual doctor is doing to us? Is he not inflicting a lot of pain on us? Does he have no matter for us? Why doesn't he smile? And so on, and so on. I've been here 11 years. The first 6 or 7 years, my own venerable, venerated teacher, Tanaja Mahabua, he never gave one smile. He always stepped on my toes. Whenever I was doing something wrong, he was behind my back and stepping, pointing to it and stepping on my toes. At that time, I didn't think that he has a lot of matter. Because he always was catching me. When I did something like that, exactly what the other monks were doing, he didn't caught the other monk. He didn't catch the other monk. He caught me. And told me. So I was always on the spot. He put me always on the spot. He never gave me a smile. It was never a grin somewhere hidden in his face. It was very, very serious. This I don't want you to see. This I don't want to see that you do that kind of thing. It took me years. Really, it took me years. Questioning myself and questioning other monks who have lived here for a longer time than me, to find out that this is exactly the kind of matter Tanajan has for us. He's pointing out the things that are unwholesome within ourselves to get rid of them. He's not pointing out the things that are good within ourselves. He doesn't have this quality. But he doesn't show the quality. And now I'm talking only about the relationship of Tanaja Mahabua towards his monks. It's very different towards lay people, because there he does not have any responsibility. They come, you know, and they go. They come and go. So he can make jokes the way he wants, because he is not responsible for their education. But with the monks, he is responsible. So it took me about 6 or 7 years to understand that actually he has much more matter for me than for other people, because he was stepping only on my toes and a few other people's. He was correcting me whenever I was doing something wrong. I tried, you know, for 4 or 5 days, I was very mindful, very eager to please him, and he never showed up. He never looked, he never didn't care. And then I got slack in my practice, and then he was there. He was just waiting behind, until I was doing something else. Just to show me, to correct me, not to do it again. So, that is a very, very different view of metta than we do have. We think of metta that somebody must be smiling and cheering and encouraging him and so on and so on. That he should be always kind and that he should give us this sugar-coated pork. Tanajan Mahaboa calls the kilesas sugar-coated pork. It's very sweet, the taste, but the poisonous effect is very long and deep. So all these pills that the kilesas give us have a very, very sweet taste, but have a very bitter and poisonous after effect. So he does not give us these things. He always points it out. He always points out the danger. The dangers to fall in the traps of the kilesas. So maybe you take this, what I just say, and maybe revise your idea or your notion or your concept of metta a little bit in a different way. It does not need to mean that a person who constantly scolds you, who constantly steps on your toes, has no metta. The end effect, and it takes a long time to show how much metta he has, because you get cured. The process of cure is painful and slow, but in the end, you will be very, very pleased and very grateful that he didn't just look away, that he always looked when you were doing something wrong. And then finally, after 7 years, when I went up to him and talked about my practice, I got the first smile. So he was satisfied with what I achieved. But it took a long time. Just think about it. You come here for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, maybe 2 months, 3 months, 6 months. And then you go. Because the torture, the pain, the dukkha is too much. You can't bear it anyway. You have to go to another place. You have to see another teacher. You have to see this or that. You have to experience this or that. For a monk, it's different. If he's really in the training, the first 5 years, he's with his teacher. He cannot go here. He cannot go there. When he goes out of the temple, he has to ask for permission of his teacher. And if he's strict, and Tanajan is very strict, then you just cannot go. For instance, when you ask him, you know, you want to see the doctor, go into town or to hospital because you don't feel well or you feel sick, then he says, yes, you can go, but you don't need to come back. So strictness, and we have to understand, strictness with the kilesas, with avijja, is the thing that helps. We cannot fool around. And Tanajan Mahaboa gives us the best example of that. He just does not let the kilesas just take the little hood of the finger. Not even the hood of the finger, nothing. Just doesn't give a chance that the kilesas can grow. He doesn't give a chance that our conceit can grow. He doesn't give us a chance that we go in the wrong direction. He will always watch over us to go in the right direction, to proceed on the path that is well described, to the proceed on the path that leads to happiness. And if one just lets one fall into this and endure it and has the determination to stay with this kind of teacher, in the end, it will show that he is one of the best doctors around. Because he actually can cure you. He can cure you of these kilesas, of these obstinate kilesas that constantly bring you into trouble. So there is something I really want you to do. I want all of you to get in a state of happiness, to get to the basis of practice, to get down to the basis of samadhi. Samadhi means peacefulness, happiness, one point. Where all the problems of this whole universe will dissolve for a moment. Samadhi. There are three kinds of samadhi. The first is normally called kanika samadhi, momentary samadhi. What it means, you just drop down to a deep state of samadhi, maybe just for a second, or for 2 seconds, or for half a minute. And then you come back. When you trained in samadhi, when you come back, you normally land in the upachara samadhi. Upachara samadhi is access samadhi. That is the second type of samadhi, access samadhi. It's a state where our thoughts cease to exist, where our thoughts ceases for a while, where our mind gathers in concentration, though seeing and experience the world still around. It is like you are in the midst of a storm with thunder and lightning and heavy rain, and you find a glass house that you open, you enter, and you close the door behind, and then you feel safe for the first time. This is called access samadhi, entering a safe place, still knowing all the things that are going on around you, but you just have the feeling they cannot touch you anymore. They're at the periphery. They're at somewhere out, but these do not touch you. When there is pain, the pain doesn't touch you. It just doesn't bother you. You just see things as they are. It's a new, whole new world. And to describe the upachara samadhi, I think one can talk the rest of one's life. There are so many different kinds of experience in upachara samadhi or this kind of access samadhi. Access samadhi, why is it called access samadhi? Because you have access to all the different worlds, all the 36 realms of existence. From there you can go to hell, or you can go to heaven, you can go to the ghost realms, you can go to the highest heavens, and whatsoever. If you are experienced, if you know the way. That's why it's called access samadhi. It gives you access to all the other planes of existence. And of course, with the other planes of existence, also the other planes of experiences. That shows us just this kind of samadhi, and that it's not difficult for us to do. Just this kind of samadhi shows us there is a safe heaven within ourselves. There is a safe haven. Whenever we need to rest, that's where we can go. So this is something we have to develop. If we do not develop this on our path, we will be lost, sooner or later. We will be swayed by the power of the kilesas to do this and to that, to get some relief of the pain. If we have this access to this kind of samadhi, if we have the power, or if we have developed the path that leads to this kind of samadhi, then we always, at every time, at every place, we have a haven where we can rest. It's like we have a bed where we can rest, put our head on, and forget whatever happened before. When we wake up, when we get out, the world is the same as it was before we entered. Nothing has changed. But we know we have been at a safe place. I want to make this extremely clear to you, that you understand it. It's something that we have to develop. It's not something that stands somewhere in books. It stands within our own hearts. And that's where we reach, within our own heart. And it's a must. It's not an option. It is a must that we reach that. If we can, and the third type of samadhi is called the apana samadhi, or the deep state of samadhi. The deep state of samadhi, the mind even gathers even more. It still is on its meditation object, that may be the Buddha, or may be the breath, or may be the combination of the Buddha or the breath, until the breath completely disappears, until the breath becomes so subtle that we think we stopped breathing. Or the Buddha becomes so fixed that we even can't think one Buddha anymore. The mind is so fixed on this object that it has only one way to go. It has to go to one-pointedness. And one-pointedness, think about it. Whatever we see in this world, there is I and me. There is I and you. There is subject and object. One-pointedness means there is no subject and there is no object. The whole world of duality will collapse. And that's what people who experience this call a wonder. When this whole world, this whole universe of duality will collapse into one point. When everything just disappears, the body disappears from our senses and the whole world disappears from our senses. That is called one point. What is left is just the knowing nature of the citta, or the knowing nature of the heart. This we call a wonder. Or Tenachan Mahabhor calls it the Nibbana of the little man. Why little man? Because everybody who puts effort in it can reach it. There is no inhibit. That's why I said in the first place, that's why I said in the beginning, if we don't go through the fires of hell, we will not reach supreme happiness. That means if we are not able, that translates, if we are not able to force our mind into one-pointedness, and that is hell, that is going through the fires of hell. Dhanacharya Mahabodhi describes his own experience for the first 3 days. He said that I had the determination not to let go of my Buddha from the moment I opened my eyes to the time I closed my eyes. And the first 3 days were hell. Their mind just did not want. It wanted to go out here, wanted to go out there. But it did not give in. And that's what he called hell. If he wouldn't have done it, he would have never reached the deep state of samadhi. And he would not have developed samadhi to such an extent that he even got stuck there for 5 years. He just went in. When he came out, he went in again. When he came out, he went in again. And he said there was no day where he did not go. Until his own teacher, Dhanacharya Man, pulled him up and said, "You see, you stayed there long enough. You see, that's no use. You have to develop wisdom." But for us, on the path of practice, samadhi is a must. It's not an option. Be it access samadhi or be it apana samadhi. For people who want to go all the way to nibbana, apana samadhi is a good goal to reach in the beginning. Just to see what it will be like when we actually achieve our goal of going to Nibbana. It's a preview. It's a Nibbana of the little man. It just feels very, very much alive. Just like real Nibbana. The only difference is that in Nibbana, the five khandhas are gone. And in the deep state of samadhi, the five khandhas are still there. In the background, but they are still there. That is the only difference. So we have to do whatever it takes. And that's why I gave you the example of Dhanacharya Mahabodhi. 3 days and three nights. He was not willing to give in. He was always putting his attention on the Buddha and not letting the mind even go out for a single minute. That was his determination. And that's what he was calling hell. If he wouldn't have gone through hell, he wouldn't have found the supreme happiness. The supreme happiness or the supreme peacefulness in this kind of state of samadhi. The rest, the power, the energy, the concentration. It's all what we need on the way of investigation. It's all what we need on the way of wisdom. If we have a blunt knife and we try to cut a tree, we can work for the rest of our life and we do not make any fudge to this tree. But if our knife is extremely sharp, it's so sharp that it cuts through the air, we will make big progress in cutting down the tree of avijja. Don't forget. Samadhi, the ability to concentrate, combined with sati, the ability to have mindfulness, to have awareness of what is going on, is an absolutely must for being able to develop wisdom. Just think about something that you caught a fish and you want to eat it. You want to put it in your fry. So you have to cut off the head. If you do not grab that fish extremely tight, then it will just wiggle out of your hand. And then you have to catch it again and catch it again. And the rest of your life, you will be just trying to catch the fishes. And the fishes are nothing else than the killing cells. You catch them, but you don't grab them strong enough, so you can't cut them off. Do you understand that? Is that clear? There is no way around. The path to deliverance is the path of Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. Sila are the five precepts. Samadhi is the ability to concentrate, to gain energy, to rest, and to develop mindfulness. Mindfulness is not just being conscious of what one is doing. Mindfulness is having the mind full of attention, full of awareness. What is going on? When you move your arm, you are aware of the movement of the arm. And even if you're really aware, then you are aware of the thought that brings the movement of the arm into motion. There's a lot of things before your arm moves or before your finger moves that goes on within your heart and within your whole five khandhas before it actually moves. It's not that it does it automatically. If the chitta leaves the body, then the body lies just like it is. It doesn't move anymore. The chitta is the one, is the prime mover of this body. It uses the body for its pleasure. That's why it's in there. And that's why it's stuck there. It cannot get, normally it cannot get out. Unless the body dies. Then it looks just for the next body. And that body dies, then it looks for the next body. And next body. And next body. It will never give up. And if we don't use investigation or panya or wisdom, and wisdom is not gaining knowledge. We have gained so much knowledge in the West and the East. We went to university, we went to school. What good is this knowledge? We learned about Buddhism. What kind of good brings us knowledge? If this learning about Buddhism, learning about the teachings of the Lord Buddha, does not bring us onto our cushions, does not bring us to sit in samadhi and to walk chongkrom, to walk, do walking meditation, then it's worthless knowledge. Whatever we need to know about the Lord Buddha's path is only so much that it brings us to experience for ourselves. And that's what he promised. Follow the path, follow the signs that I set, and you will experience it within your own heart. Ehi pasika. It's apparent to everyone who practices. But it's not apparent to anyone who studies. So knowledge is not wisdom. Remember this well. Wisdom is gained from insight. What does insight mean? Seeing inside the true nature. It's a connection with the heart, where the heart or where the kilesas give way for a second and you see the true nature. That is what's called insight. So the path of wisdom is the path of teaching the heart. See, you understand it? Now you have to do it again. So you investigate and teach the heart. Have you understood it? Have you understood the four elements? Have you understood the body? If you have not understood the body, you still have to investigate it. You have to dissect it. You have to split it up. You have to observe with your heart. Until your heart understands. And the heart is the only thing that can let go. If you are convinced that greed is not a good thing, you still are greedy. If you are convinced in your mind that hate is not a good thing, you are still full of hate. So this does not solve the problem. We have to experience. And by experience I mean the heart has to experience What is it? What does it mean, greed? Experience within our hearts. What is it? Greed. Is it something I really like? Is it something that I cherish? Or is it something lost? And we do that one time, we do that 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times, 1,000,000 times, and maybe even 1,000,000,000 times. And the 1,000,000,001 time, the heart understands and lets go. And there is no question left. Greed has gone, hate has gone at the same time. But if we do not teach our heart, if we do not teach wisdom, if we do not investigate the things that are moving us, if we do not investigate the things that we are made of, and we are only made of 5 things, 5 groups, that are the 5 khandhas. And the 5 khandhas are body, vedana, feeling, sanya, memory and associations, sankhara, thoughts, and vijnana, consciousness. That's all what exists. Everything else is made up. It's like a good cook takes 5 ingredients and makes all this delicious food that we see in this world. It's all made up out of these 5 khandhas. If we don't understand it, we are fooled by it. Like we are fooled by the different dishes. Because we never investigate that they only consist of the 5 ingredients. So let us taste each ingredient as pure ingredients. Let's taste the rupa as rupa. Let's taste vedana as vedana. Let's taste sanya as sanya and sankhara as sankhara and vijnana as vijnana. To get the taste of each component. Get the taste of each component the whole universe is made of. Our universe. Our world. And that is the only thing that concerns us. Our world. This is the path of wisdom. So, go back to samadhi. If we don't have the mindfulness, if we don't have the awareness, if we cannot grab the things that are happening, and within one mind moment, or within 1 second, or within one slash of the eyelid, there are 3,000 mind moments. If we can't catch it, it's just a train that rushes by and leads us to wherever it goes. We cannot control this train. If we don't get our awareness, if we don't get our mindfulness up to the speed of the running train, we will not be able to look who is sitting in the front, who is driving the engine, and whoever else is in the different wagons of this train. It just will run, rush, and rush, and rush. And the wind that it makes will drift us along. From one birth to the next birth, and next birth, and next birth. So we have to sharpen our mind. Sati, it's called. Tanaja Mahabhoa, sati is the basis of practice. If you don't have sati, whatever we do is worthless. It just has no value. If you do something without sati, it has no value. So if some people are doing it slowly, then Tanaja says, I wonder if they have any mindfulness. If they eat extremely slowly, or they brush their teeth slowly, thinking how mindful they are not in the bit mindful. Not in the least are they mindful. They are just self-conscious of how good and how slow they do the task. That's not mindfulness. Mindfulness is catching all the movement. It's catching the mind movements and the body. What pulls what? What pulls the trigger? And what follows after it? It's following cause and effect. So, make up your mind. First of all, get down. Whatever it costs, get down into this state of samadhi. and be just upachara samadhi. It's not beyond your abilities. It's not. Even apana samadhi is not beyond your abilities. You just have to center the mind and not let it go out. Under no circumstances will you allow to go out. It is like, when you want an example, you have to keep the riches of a king in a room. You are not allowed to let anybody in or let anybody out. This is your task. So you have to stand in the front of the door all the time. You cannot take a nap. You just cannot go. You cannot even go and pee. You have to stand there. Stand there and stand there and observe it and preserve the riches of the king. And that's how you get into samadhi. You just take attention on your Buddha or on the breath. And nothing else interests you. Nothing else. There is no way. And your determination, and that is determination, is the important factor. The effort is not to press the mind on the object. The effort is, once you see it wants to go out, to pull the mind back and put it back where it belongs. That's all what we need. It's no force. It's no power we need. It's just this little, come back. There you are, come back. And come back. And come back. That's where our effort is. And the effort is constant. The effort is not waiting. And the determination, when we sit for an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours, then we sit for this time. When we walk for 3 hours, then we walk. And of course, you will experience it like everybody else has experienced. It is hell. It is a lot of dukkha. It's a lot of suffering. It's a lot of hardship just to keep the mind still. So this, for the short time, you are here. I want you to get in there, to get a relief, the first time relief from the symptoms of dukkha. Then after, we know the path and we can do it every day. We can go and start on doing investigation. To get rid of the obstinate kilesas that are ruling our heart, that have their roots so deep within our heart that it's extreme pain to take out the roots of greed, hate, and delusion. So if we are not mindful, if we don't have the power, if we don't have a sharp knife, we will not be able to do that task. And now I ask to stop it.